very good evening to you. Alright, Ashton.
Modulate the music.
Yes, sir, I lost the fader.
Okay, dokie. What do you mean you lost the fader? You've been doing it for years. You should know where the fader is.
Flipping around all over the place tonight.
Golly, I can't believe it. Right, here we go. Probably the most requested guest on the programme, the person I'm asked for most, is our next guest tonight, the legendary David Icke. A man who risked ridicule, risked losing enormous amounts of money when he gave up his safe media job to do something completely different, and a man now who I think is gaining more and more respect. And in this world in which we live, where everybody seems takes a position of authority in this world, in this democratic world apparently that we live in, where everybody is supposed to have an equal say in what goes on, and the people who are in charge are supposed to be there as our servants, somewhere along the line, it seems to have got messed up. And to many people, David Icke is one of the few people who seems to see through the mist, the fog. And David joins me now. Always a pleasure to have him on the program. David, a very good evening to you.
Thank you, James. I tell you why it's always great to come on this show, because over the years, we've talked many times, and going way back, and a time when I was being laughed at and ridiculed as a matter of course, and I always had respect from you on right from the start, and it's great to talk to you anytime.
And you see, the way now things have changed, I imagine back in those days of the turquoise tracksuits and everything else, and when we look at all of us and what we used to wear in the 80s, it's okay. People put up clips of me doing stuff in the 80s.
I used to watch you overnight on Yorkshire television, wasn't it?
That's right.
That's right.
And you know, people say, oh, you used to... Well, that's what everybody wore, and that's how everybody looked in those days.
Yeah.
And it's a bit unfair. And you actually never said some of the things that you were quoted as saying anyway. What did you?
Well, I don't think many people looked quite so much as a prat as me in that turquoise shell suit, but I was going through a period which I was talking to a journalist earlier this evening about this. It was a period when my mind opened to enormous amounts of information that just started flooding in, and it was like pressing too many keys on the computer at once. And the computer freezes up and says, I can't process this, I'm freezing, see ya. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened to me for about 3 months in what I call the turquoise period. But it was vital to me because life does tend to give us our greatest gifts, brilliantly disguised as our worst nightmare. And that was my worst nightmare, the level of ridicule that I went through at that time.
But what you were doing was trying to find out why these things suddenly came into your mind, why you suddenly saw the world in the way that you saw it, as far as I can see. And you were grasping to try and understand it.
Exactly that. But I'll tell you what, mate. The more that I travel and the more that I see and talk to people, there is a massive awakening going on. It's like people are like waking up. It's like the breaking out of hypnotic trance. Not yet the vast majority, but more and more and more. Mm. And you know, when I talk to them, they have gone through a similar process. Maybe not as extreme as mine. Certainly not in the public arena like I did. But a process where suddenly they start to see the white bits between the lines. They start to see the world in a way they didn't see before. And the more that I've kind of studied this and got more understanding of it, it is so much the same as the stooge on the stage of a hypnotist stage show, where the hypnotist implants the belief that, say, there's an elephant in the audience or something. And suddenly, he flicks his fingers, and that implanted belief suddenly is removed, and suddenly they don't see an elephant anymore, and you suddenly see, in other words, reality in a completely different way. And it's happening to more and more people. And while this extraordinary level of Orwellian control, imposition, surveillance moves on by the day, alongside that, is this terrifically encouraging wake up that's happening among increasingly numbers of people who are beginning to see it. They're beginning to see beyond the illusion.
What we're not doing is we don't seem to be regaining our power. Now, just before we carry on this, there's a documentary on you on Boxing Day on Channel 5, 11 o'clock at night, isn't there?
Yeah.
And it's called Was He Right? I think it should have been called, in my view anyway, Is He Right?
Because
I don't like this was. You know, I know we're all getting on, but yeah, there are still a couple of years left in all of us.
Yeah, I've certainly got a lot more to do. Yeah, this documentary came about, James, because, interesting, you know, back in those days of enormous ridicule and I, you know, being kind of crazy and a kamikaze character, I decided to accept invitations to go and talk at universities around Britain at the height of the ridicule, and of course what they wanted to do was have a laugh and have me as the turn. And I went through a terrific ridicule doing that, and then going into to talk in other places in those days. And I used to keep asking myself, why am I doing this? But something just kept saying, go on, go on, it's going somewhere. So I went with it, even though I'm thinking, this is going nowhere. And what happened to bring this documentary about, it's really a good example that, you know, if you keep going and you keep doing what you believe to be right, it's amazing how things can come round. Because in 1994, a student in Belfast came to a talk that I did in Belfast, and I remember it clearly. And you know, you wouldn't have had any trouble getting the audience in a minibus, you know. I mean, because, you know, by that time it was like no one wanted to know. And but he listened, and years later he became a producer for an independent production company. And he started to look, particularly after 9/11, that what I was talking about in 1994, what the agenda was actually happening. And then he looked at the books and he saw more stuff. And that's how it came about. Then he sold the idea to Channel 5, and they came up with this program, David Icke, Was He Right? And I've seen a copy of it, and it really, for the first time, they've looked at what I'm doing with a blank sheet of paper and not a preconceived idea. And so I'm very pleased with it.
They're not taking the mick or...
No, nothing like that, no.
Excellent. All right, David, stay with me. We've got to take a break. We'll be back with the legendary David Icke after this.
And number nerds are go for super cash winning on TalkSport with Paddy Power.
Listen every Thursday at Drive from 4. And if you've got the brains to answer the 5-1 Paddy Power poser, you could win massive cash prizes.
Number nerds are go.
Nice, £300.
Play 5-1 every Thursday at Drive from 4 on TalkSport with PaddyPower.com. The place for fun and games.
When your van's a big part of your working life, it's nice to know that Norwich Union Direct work as hard as you do. One of their van insurance experts worked out the cover I needed over the phone. No form filling, and I got a great quote. Their 24/7 claims line's great, too. In fact, it's midnight now, and I'm calling to let them know I've had an accident.
For van insurance with up to 70% no claims discount, find out why with a choice of the professional and call Norwich Union Direct on 0800 560 510, or visit norwichunion.com/van. Insurer standard terms and conditions apply. No claims discount applies to the risk element of the premium only. Cover not available in Northern Ireland.
If your Christmas wish is for more hours in a day, so you can get all your shopping done, you're in luck. This Christmas, Argos is opening more stores for longer than ever before. Check the store locator at argos.co.uk for details of your nearest store. Don't Christmas shop for it, Argos it.
Talk Sport. On 1089 and 1053 AM.
Look!
And on Freeview Channel 723.
Meet the new star of the Christmas show.
Talk Sport.
Okie dokie, we're getting loads of catchphrases in, thank you very much indeed. If you want to send in a I need a new catchphrase, Dave, that's what it's about. I don't have a catchphrase, I need one. Text me 81089. If you want to talk to David Icke, loads of people ringing in now, call us 08704 202020. Right, I want to talk, first of all, you, of course, you know, in your green period, never mind turquoise,
yep,
when you were involved in green, I'm getting a little fed up with the way that this whole thing about climate change, global warming and all that is being used as a tool to control us, in my view. I was talking to some fairly eminent climatologists over the last few months. The whole thing about global warming and climate change that the people I've been talking to say, listen, this is a normal phenomenon. I'm afraid the planet changes. It evolves. It may well be be hurried along by what mankind does, but in the scope of things, whatever we do, it is going to change. And parts of the planet that are now inhabitable in the future won't be. And the other side is the same as well. Of course, bits of the planet now, like the poles that you can't really live in, will be habitable, and we just have to learn to adapt to the different land masses when the oceans rise and fall. And what we're getting from all the politicians now is, oh, yeah, well, you know, you've got to stop driving this, you've got to recycle that, you can't do this, you can't do that, you must pay more money to the people who are in charge, and then we'll make it all right, which, of course, they can't do. They're blatantly lying to us.
He doesn't sound like them, does it, really?
No, actually,
James, I was talking earlier tonight to someone about this. I think the basic summary that you've just put forward is very close to the truth. It's interesting to me that if you look at the Maya people who left a incredible their version of measuring time and the cycles of the earth, they talked about great cycles, because everything's a cycle. Summer, spring, winter, autumn, they're cycles, but there are bigger cycles and bigger cycles, and they talked about cycles of 26,000 years, one of which is in their measurement coming to an end in this period now, the next few years. 2012 keeps getting mentioned in regard to that, although some people think that it's not necessarily exactly that time. And when I was in South Africa recently, talking to a Zulu shaman, a great friend of mine, Credo Mutwa, near the Kalahari Desert, he lives now, and he was telling me about the great African accounts and knowledge going way back on the other side of the world, and they talk about the same thing basically. And I feel that what we're seeing now is a vibrational change going on, which is affecting the energy field, the magnetic field, etc., of the Earth, and it is. As it changes, it is affecting weather patterns. Now, I'm not saying for a second, and I wouldn't, that pollution is a good thing. I don't think it is.
Absolutely, it really isn't.
But I think that there are other explanations for what's going on, and I do agree that there are great cycles, and there are different cycles that affect the Earth in different ways, because we come in. When we're born, and we go out sometime within, for most people, within 70, 80, 90 years, we tend to think that the Earth, as we experience it in that time, is as it's always has been and always will be. Now, we know for a fact it's not always been like this. And I think that there are these cycles changing, and affecting us in ways that are beyond what is being suggested, that it's all to do with pollution. Because makes me think about some of this stuff is when they say, this is the hottest the Earth has been since so-and-so, and they go back, and you go back, well, the time when the Earth was hotter than it is now, where were the factories? Where were the unbelievable numbers of cars and stuff like that? I mean, what caused that to be hotter then than it is now? So I think there is a lot in what you say, to be honest.
There's
a lot more to know.
I was talking to a guy the other day who said that, of course, what people aren't telling us is, and they know, is that the poles are beginning to change, that they will eventually, they have flipped, and the magnetic poles change from time to time, and also the whole of the planet moves on its axis, and this all changes the climate. And we're going through a period now, within the next 50-100 years or something, when the world will change unrecognizably. But none of the politicians, and they must know this. I talked to David Cameron the other day, and I just can't believe that David Cameron could possibly be the leader of this country. I just cannot believe a man who is as uninteresting and as dull as this man is ever going to be the Prime Minister of this country. It worries me greatly.
Yeah, well, a lot of these politicians are actually ignorant. I mean, there are two types of politician. There's the majority who are uninformed, basically, and are going around blind to what's actually going on. And there's something, and I find this with journalists, I find this with doctors, I find this with politicians. They are what I call repeaters. I mean, I talk about this in this Channel 5 program, where instead of independent research and looking at it dispassionately and looking at the information available, they just repeat what someone else tells them. You get
exactly.
They go to teacher training college, and then they repeat what the curriculum says they must teach the children. Doctors repeat what they learn at medical school. So the people in the positions of authority who are controlling, if you like, the perception in the mainstream of what things are and how things are, they're actually repeaters. They're repeating what someone has told them. And so you get this situation where politicians just repeat what they're told, and they're making decisions based on information that's largely not true, or fundamentally doesn't include loads of information that should be there if they're going to make a rounded, unbiased decision.
When we go back to talking about the stuff that I think's made you a legend, we talked about it before, these people are not in control anyway, most of them. These people are just a front for whoever is running the planet.
Yeah, there's two types of politician. There's the vast majority who are pawns in a game they don't understand. And then there's the few, and it is the few, who are in some level of awareness of what is actually going on and where it is designed to go. I would put Blair in that category. These are, and certainly would put Bush in that category, but these are still at the puppet level. They're the puppet level that are more aware of what's going on and some of the forces that are manipulating events behind the scenes, but they're still puppets, because the people with the real power, they don't put themselves on public display where they can be identified. They want power. They don't necessarily want the acknowledgement that they are powerful. Like some people have an ego that they want to be acknowledged that they're in control and they're at the point of power. These people are just interested in power. And they operate behind the scenes, and they place into positions of apparent power, like prime ministers and presidents, etc., people who will do their bidding. For instance, if you want to be president of the United States, you have to attract vast amounts of money, the cuckoo land amounts of money. Well, that comes at a price. It comes at a price with the agenda that these forces behind the scenes that make sure the money's made available, that they have an agenda of this is what's going to happen if you come to power. And presidents and people in positions of power that are apparently spontaneously, quote, elected, they are brought through and made ready to come to those positions of power way back in life.
Do you still believe that there is no chance that unless the people in authority want it, there is no way that the amount of death and destruction we're already inflicting on each other can move to the next level, so that these people in power, whether we see them or we don't see them, whether they're human or not, aren't going to allow the sort of destruction that we are now capable of?
Well, I think that one thing that has become very clear in my research over the years is the number of those who are manipulating in awareness of the big picture of what they're trying to achieve, which is a global Orwellian state, so the few can control the many, from a central point, basically. This is why we've moved from the tribal situation, that the tribes were brought together under what we call countries. Countries are now being brought together under what we call super states. The European Union is the most advanced, obviously, but they're bringing in the North American Union in Canada, Mexico, and the United States, and the plan is to replace the dollar with a currency called the Amero. And I've been writing and talking about this for years, and now there are people suggesting in America, in some of these groups that are connected to this force, if you like, about bringing in a currency for those three countries called the Amero. And the idea is to extend that to the whole of the Americas. We have the African Union, which is which replaced the old Organization of African Unity. That is designed to centrally control Africa. And then we've got the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, quote, free trade zone in the Pacific area and Asia and stuff. And they want to turn that, as they did the European Union, into from a simple trading block into a centralized superstate. So you'll have a world government. Under that, you'll have these four superstates, and then under that, you'll have nation states, which will be nothing more than basically, you know, local councils by comparison. And the reason for that is, if there are a few of you, and I keep emphasizing this, that there are not that many. Compared with the global population, they are very, very small indeed. This is why they have to manipulate behind the scenes. If you want to control the global population, there's a few of you, you have to centralize decision-making. Diversity of decision-making, diversity of choice is your worst nightmare, because you cannot control centrally with that diversity. You have to centralize, and that's why we've seen this incessant centralization of power, and it's continuing today, because they're going to come back, James. They're going to come back, because this is the agenda, and try to force this constitution for Europe upon us, which will turn us into the United States of Europe.
Well, they've already got the constitution of Europe. It's just a question of telling the rest of us it's all a done deal as far as they're concerned.
Absolutely right. I mean, that's the way it works, that the agenda is what they're following, and if something gets in the way, then they just wait, and then they have another go. This is why when countries have voted against something in Europe, they've waited and had another referendum or whatever until they get the result they want, because they are working to what someone told me in America who worked within the Canadian government. They said they saw this chart one night when they were destroying documents that they didn't want the public and the provinces of Canada to see. And she said she saw this, what she described as like a biorhythm chart. And this is way back in the 80s, and she said it was pointing out what was going to happen at different times, and even who was going to be in power in places like Quebec at that time. And when I was speaking to her, she was saying all these things have happened. So on the surface, we're sold the movie of choice, of random events, when actually there is a manipulation to a very strong and coldly calculated agenda, which hides behind the fact that the public have made choices when the public have actually made the choices they were manipulated to make.
Okay, now, listen, Chris in Cumbria has just texted me. He said, James, ask David, if you could, why people don't, like the vast majority of society, why they have no individuality and act now like robots. Do we act like robots, do you think?
Well, I think so. You know, this is one of the areas of research that I've really gone into big time. And I'll just present this as in people like everything that I say and do. I present it for people to make of what they will, not to tell them to. They must believe it. And the last thing I want to do, because I'd just be another guy selling a belief system. But I've begun to understand more and more the difference between consciousness, being conscious, and being at the what I call the computer level of reality. The more that I understand about the nature of the physical body, the more obviously it becomes that it is a biological computer. They're actually developing biological computers now around the world, and by that I mean computers with the ability to think, not needing input to earn data so that it then reacts to that data.
But why are so...
the ability to think, and the body's at one level genetically has the ability to think and perceive and react. We inherit through from our parents and stuff and the genetic line. It's like inheriting hard drives, and sometimes data on the hard drive is emphasized, and we take a certain personality traits and certain abilities, and sometimes another trait is, and we'll take on that ability. But basically, we are like on the genetic level, we're like a computer, and we inherit certain traits, certain programs. And then when we have experiences in life, it's like downloading that experience onto the hard drive, and we go on being
but you
being
know
affected
the,
by
the
it.
Interesting thing is that we are in this situation. More of us than ever before take part in television and radio programs where we can phone in, we can vote, yep. we can talk, we can text or whatever else, but nobody votes in elections. We all seem to think there's no point and there's nothing that can be done. Now, MPs and politicians will tell you, oh, that's terrible, you must get everybody out there voting, but they're rubbing their hands together thinking we only need to convince a few people all over the place and we'll keep our soft jobs and we'll keep control because nobody's bothered.
Yeah, well, just very quickly on that thing about the computer, just to finish that point very quickly, because what you've just raised is an important point. Therefore, we have the computer level of reality, and then we have consciousness that is beyond that and sees in a much greater vision, a much greater perspective. What the system has done and what it's designed to do is to hold us in the computer level of reality throughout our lives so we don't become conscious and see through what is actually going on. And this awakening that we were talking about earlier, this awakening is people becoming conscious. And when you do that, you go beyond the genetic computer level of perception and thought, and you start to see the world in a completely different way. In terms of what you just said, for me, elections are a waste of time, to be honest, because I don't see the point in choosing between two masks on the same face, because the way the whole thing's set up is, and you can see this in Democrats and Republicans in America and also with Labour and Conservative here, the way that we are sold the myth is the idea that we have choice. And what happens is you've got a party in government, and it, as the government, has the right to introduce changes, policies, legislation, changes in society. So it does. And overwhelmingly, these changes mirror the agenda for more and more centralization of power and control. Now, the opposition party at that point does not have the ability to introduce changes in society, so it opposes the government. Then we have this farce called an election when they change sides every now and again, and then the opposition party starts introducing changes in society that reflect the agenda for centralization of power, and the other party that was doing it in government now opposes it to give this idea that we have choice. There's a wonderful phrase they use in America: it doesn't matter who you vote for, the government still gets in. And that basically sums it up. So for me, I'm quite encouraged by the fact that fewer people are voting, for the simple reason that they are starting to realize that nothing changes by changing the party, in effect, except the rhetoric and a few little fringe things.
Okay, right, we've got to take another break. Sorry about this, David. When we've taken the break, we come back, we've got hundreds of people who want to talk to you. We're going to start taking some phone calls, starting off with Russ, who's in Filey in North Yorkshire. He'll be through to David Icke after these words.
Listen to Talk Sport on DAB Digital Radio, and you could hear things in an entirely different way.
Look, I really don't want to argue with you, mate. There are so many more important things in this world than football.
Taking the hiss out of medium wave with staggeringly refreshing clarity.
Immigration? Doesn't really bother me.
With DAB Digital Radio's costing from around £30...
You'd be a bonkers mentalist not to get one.
Up the arsenal.
You won't believe your ears.
Check coverage for availability.
Or ask your nice young grandson.
Oh, hello. What's this? Squirreled away in the bathroom cabinet. Nivea for Men Revitalizing Cream Q10. Oh, this explains why my flatmate gets all the girls. Good genes. Huh. Two can play that game. I'll use twice as much. Soon I'll have the lovely revitalized skin. Time you learnt the meaning of gooseberry, my friend.
Nivea for Men Revitalizing Cream Q10 and Eye Relief Q10. Look better than you feel.
Keeping your family safe this winter is about more than wrapping them up warm or driving safely. You'll need to remember a phone number too. The National Gas Emergency Number. It's 0800-111-9. So wherever you are, and whatever you do, if you smell gas, dial it. It's 0800-111-9. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, 0800-111-9. Calls will be recorded and may be monitored. Does not operate in Northern Ireland.
It's this year's most eagerly anticipated broadcasting event, the Clash of the Titans.
5.5 metric tons of furious flesh in a tanked up talk-off of 2006 Cup News and Sports Stories.
Parody. Completely unfathomable to the ordinary mind.
God! What is going on in this world?
Whale!
Are we ready
to do a little rock and roll?
And in the chair,
or possibly asleep underneath it,
Alan Blastermind Brazil.
The Clash of the Titans.
Christmas Eve from 6 p.m. on Talk Sports.
It's the James Whale Show.
Okay, broadcasting through the transmitters of TalkSport across the nation, across the world on the web, and, of course, medium wave around the country, across Northern Europe and Scandinavia. And, of course, you can hear us even more clearly on DAB Digital Radio, Sky Digital, NTL and Tele West. Talking tonight on the programme to the legendary David Icke. And let me just remind you, David Icke's the subject of a documentary on Channel 5 at 11 o'clock. On Boxing Day night, and it's called David Icke, Was He Right? David, let's take some calls. This is Russ in Filey. Russ.
Hiya, James. Hiya, David.
All right, mate.
Now then, yeah. I've been researching UFOs for the past 18 years, and I've noticed a few other things, you know, like conspiracies that have been spoken about, etc., and with these lizard people. But one of the frightening things what I have come to realise, if you have a look around you on TV and what have you, you'll see that the police are better equipped with better equipment, clothing, weapons and ammunition than his own army. And, you know, one has got to ask the question, why is this?
Well,
there's only one reason.
Well, I tell you what I've noticed. I'm getting very concerned about luminous jackets. I think they're breeding. I think they're the clothing version of rabbits, mate.
I think you're right.
What, in simple terms, dark suits, usually men in dark suits, make the laws, and luminous jackets impose them on the people. And they're just coming all over the place. And, of course, what we're moving more and more towards, and Russ is right, is a centralized national police force. And everything is being centralized.
Have you noticed, Dave, how our police are now beginning, like some of the police in Eastern Bloc countries, to wear balaclavas? They go out, their whole faces are covered quite often, and they are wearing the most elaborate body armor. They carry guns as well, that members of the armed forces would love to get hold of. And I think what Russ says is quite right. You know, our police are becoming better armed than the army for some strange reason.
Yeah, the same's happening in other places. There is a technique of introducing this agenda, which I've termed the totalitarian tiptoe, and that is when you go from A to Z, but you don't go A to Z in one leap. You go from A to B, C to E, or whatever. You do it in little steps, and it's the equivalent to if you put a frog in a saucepan and it's boiling water, it will jump out because it'll see there's a problem immediately. You put the frog in the saucepan and you heat it slowly, it'll sit there and cook. And so what we're seeing, and since 9/11, of course, everything's got faster and faster and faster, but we're seeing this totalitarian tiptoe introducing step by step, faster and faster steps, this Orwellian state. And for me, one of the definitions, James, of fascism and totalitarianism is, are those in uniform, are the authorities subject to the same laws and the same interpretation of the law as the people? If the answer is no, then we're getting in a serious totalitarian state. And my goodness me, the answer is no in this country. I'll give you a simple example. I was in Parliament Square a few months ago talking to Brian Hoare, the guy with the, you know, the, yeah, doing the protest. And this police turned up, and one of them had a camera in my face for about 15 minutes. You know, I said it's not my best side, but didn't listen. Mm. And then I went with the Channel 5 team to Parliament Square filming this documentary. And we crossed the road onto the central part of the square, and it, out of nowhere, I don't know if they came out of the ether or what, came these two policemen, one a policeman, one a policewoman, who started asking what we were doing and what we were filming. And I asked them, you know, what they thought they were doing, asking me that question. It was none of their business. Anyway, we started filming them. And now they start putting their hands over the cameras and saying, you can't film me. Well, they could film me for 15 minutes about a couple of weeks or so before. And you see this all the time. You see it in simple, though outrageous things, like people being caught on traffic cameras for a few miles over the limit, and then a policeman doing 120 odd miles an hour and getting away with it. You see it, and how many people would not only not be charged for shooting a man seven times in the head while holding him to the ground, but actually be allowed to continue to work as an armed police officer. I mean, once the law is not applied to uniforms and authority as it is to the rest of the people, we're in a totalitarian situation, and we are, and it's getting worse by the day. And the real thing is that there are vast numbers of us compared with how many there are of these people that are trying to impose this, and really we need to start ceasing to cooperate with them, because if we cooperate with it, we're cooperating with the building of our own prison, and that's not a really good idea.
Okay, Russ, thank you very much indeed. Let's move on. Let's talk to Ian, who's in Greater Manchester. Ian, you're on the air on TalkSport through to David Icke.
James and David, it's
hello.
Great to talk to you. I've got two questions, if I may. First of all, David, what part do you think street corner louts play in the scheme of things? Do you think the Illuminati allow them to intimidate the rest of us because it wants to frighten the majority to sort of rationalise getting everyone chipped? Or are the Illuminati actually afraid of what the street corner thugs might do if they challenge them too much?
Well, on that, the key manipulation technique that I've been banging on about for nearly the best part of 20 years, which goes alongside the totalitarian tito, is problem-reaction-solution. You create the problem, you get the public to a point in reaction to the problem where they say, do something, this can't go on, and then you offer the solution to the problem you've created. So the more you can get people in fear, the more they will accept having their rights and freedoms taken away to be protected from what they've been manipulated to fear. This is what the whole war on terror is about. It kind of strikes me as seriously bizarre when you have a situation where for this Channel 5 documentary I went to the Downing Street with a film crew, and Downing Street you have all these luminous jackets, policemen in luminous jackets with guns, and they're pointing them outwards. Behind them is the home of a man who with others has made decisions that have cost the lives of hundreds of thousands of people based on provable lies that were calculated lies to bring about the outcome they wanted, which was the invasion of Iraq. And unless those policemen turn round, point their guns at the house, and say, come out quietly with your hands up, this society makes no sense whatsoever, because we're actually protecting the real terrorists while using the excuse of terrorism to take away basic freedoms, problem, reaction, solution. And so the more you can get people in a situation of fear, and also divide and rule, then the more that you are going to control society. And so you don't want harmony. This is the point, Ian, I'd emphasize. Right. If you're using problem, reaction, solution, and you're trying to manipulate society, harmony is your worst nightmare. You know, if you get a group of people and they're in harmony, they're very difficult to manipulate. But you play one against the other, get one frightened of another and one antagonistic to another, then you're in a situation you've got divide and rule, and you can play one part off against the other. So harmony is the worst thing that they want. That's why constantly they are seeking to bring about disharmony, and this is one manifestation of it.
Right. Okay, thank you. I've just got one more to ask. I work in psychiatry, and most days I meet people who have delusions and will sometimes claim to have two people living in their stomachs and things like that. And they're totally sincere and believe their delusions. And I'm just wondering, how can you convince me that the people who report to you that they see shape-shifting lizards are not deluded? And I ask you that because I'm 95% on your side.
Well, the thing is, how this came about, this whole shape-shifting thing, was not me sitting in a darkened room and coming to that conclusion.
Right.
I've travelled to more than 40 countries researching what I'm talking about. And what I started coming across I guess towards the late 90s, really. The first book I did on this was The Biggest Secret. And in 1998, I wrote that. And they were telling me, and in all these different places and cultures, and they came from all different backgrounds and different levels of income and all that stuff, and they told me the same story of how they had seen someone, often in positions of power, they're not always, turn in front of their eyes from a human form to a reptilian-type form. Not always reptilian, but that was the common theme. A different form, and then come back again. And so when you hear one or two, you think, what? But then when you hear 10, 20, 30, 100, and then you start looking at ancient accounts in different parts of the world, and you see that the theme again. For instance, I got a call when I was in South Africa years ago from this man, Credo Mutwa, and he said to me, how do you know this? He'd read The Biggest Secret. How do you know this? He says, you're talking about the Chitahuri, which translates as children of the serpent. And he then told me about how all this story is all in the ancient accounts of Africa. And I've got my information from people I'd come across in Europe and America. And when you then start to pull it together, and then you talk to insiders who are on the inside but really don't want to be but can't get out, and they tell you, yes, this phenomenon is true. And then you start to understand how it's possible, because one of the great challenges that I've had is that we are kept from so much information that you have to research so many different subjects to actually see the picture. For instance, if you think that this world that we're looking at, apparently outside ourselves, this three-dimensional world, is actually solid, and the physical body is actually solid, then shape-shifting becomes ridiculous. You can't move from a solid form to a solid form and then back again. Once you realize, however, that the only place that this three-dimensional world exists apparently outside of us is in our heads, and the brain is like it's a highly sophisticated version of a television, in the sense that when you ask people what is television, they'll say, well, it's pictures on a screen and it's programs and stuff. Well, the only place that television exists in that form is on the television screen. Everywhere else, it's frequency fields, which are then decoded into pictures. Our brain does that in a holographic form. But what is apparently solid is not actually solid. It's an illusion that's created as our brain constructs reality. This is why you have this contradiction, but it's not really, whereby quantum physicists have shown that even though this table here, which I'm banging on, appears to be solid, it's actually not. It's actually a vibrational field. And also, this physical world is constructed of atoms, but when you go inside the atom, there's nothing in it. As one physicist wrote, if you take the atom to be the size of a cathedral, the nucleus in the center of it is about the size of a 10-cent piece. The rest is what we call empty space. How can that construct a solid world? It can't. But our brain does it. So what we're looking at when we see people move from one form to another is it's an energetic change. And so there is an energetic field, and our brain decodes that as a human form. That energetic field then switches, and our brain then decodes it as a non-human form, and then it switches back, and we decode it as a human form again. In our physical reality, we see that as, did you see that? It just changed. But it's actually an energetic change that's going on. It's only the decoding that appears to make it a physical change. So once you start to realize the illusory nature of reality, then what appears on the surface to be impossible suddenly starts to become start to make sense. It's the same thing as when people first said the Earth was round. How can it be? You'd fall off the bottom. You introduce the law of gravity, the apparently impossible becomes perfectly logical. And the more that the information that's available in all these subject areas is suppressed in mainstream society, the less chance people have got to have an understanding of these apparently bizarre phenomenon, because they can't perceive how they're possible. But they are, once you realise that reality is an illusion.
Have you ever seen a shape-shifting lizard person?
Well, I've seen eyes change, and I tell you what I did have, James. I had an extraordinary experience, even before I got into this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I had an extraordinary experience with Ted Heath. And when I started researching this, a few years after this experience, Ted Heath came up in my research again and again and again. In fact, I said things about him in The Biggest Secret, which should have, if they were not true, have got me in a court of law in about 5 minutes. And they were read to him by a journalist a week after the book came out, and nothing ever happened, because what I was saying was true, because of where I got the information from. Anyway, what happened? Again, this is before I was into any of this. I was a national spokesman for the Green Party. And if you remember, we had a one-off great result in 1989 in the European elections.
I do.
So because the polls were saying the Greens were going to do well, suddenly we were invited onto the election programs that night as the results came in, as we normally weren't. And I was invited onto Sky Television News, Sky News. And when I arrived, I was taken into the makeup room by this lady, and the door was kind of open, and I thought the room was empty, and I went into the seat and sat down, and she said, "Oh, someone will be along in a minute." And as I looked to my right, hidden by the door when I came in, there was Ted Heath, and he'd just been interviewed on the program, and then I was having his makeup taken off, or waiting to have it done. And I turned to him, and I just said, you know, Prime Minister, 1970, 74 he was, I just said to him, "All right, how you doing? Nice to meet you." And he never looked at me in terms of, he never turned his body or anything. He just turned his head, and he looked at me. And his eyes started at the top of my head. His head never moved. Once his head had turned and looked at me, the rest of his head never moved, just his eyes. And he started at the top of my head, and he went down my body to my feet, and then back again to the top of my head, and then just turned and looked at the mirror and never said a word, never spoke a word the entire time. And the thing that hit me was, as I looked at him, as he was, I can only describe it as like he was scanning me in some way, his eyes went completely black, even the whites of the eyes. And when you look at someone, you make what we call eye contact. There's a point where you make contact with their eyes. I looked into this guy's eyes while he's doing this, and you look straight through them. It was like looking into two black holes. That's how I described it to my family when I got back, because it was such a phenomenal experience. I came back and said, "You'll never guess what's happening with Ted Heath tonight." And anyway, as I was started to research this and traveling around the world, a number of people, a significant number of people, have said to me that they'd had this experience, not in their case, of seeing a reptilian eyes come replace human eyes, but seeing people whose eyes turn completely black. And I'm thinking, that happened to me. And as I understand this, and again, going back to what I was talking about in terms of this energetic thing and not being, you know, exactly what we see, creation is, or this world that we live in is a frequency range that our eyes can access, and it's a tiny, tiny frequency range that of what we call visible light. It's infinitesimal. As one writer said, humans are basically blind. And in the same space that this world exists are all the other worlds and frequency ranges of existence, in the same way that in this room now where I'm sitting are all the frequencies of all the radio and television stations broadcast into the Isle of Wight. Now, I can't see them, they can't see each other. And as long as they're not too close on the dial, they don't interfere with each other at all, but they're sharing the same space. I get a television or a radio, and I tune it to TalkSport. That's what I get. I get TalkSport. I move the dial, and I go to Radio 1. I'm now getting Radio 1. But TalkSport didn't cease to exist when I moved to Radio 1. It's still broadcasting. It's just that I'm not tuned to it anymore, so I'm not aware of it. And this physical body, if you like, tunes the senses level of existence, tunes us in to this frequency range of visible light. And we are led to believe that this world is all there is, basically. It's a frequency range within infinite frequency ranges. Now, on a frequency range very, very close to this one, there are are entities that are able to, and again, this is a constant theme all over the world, in every culture going way back, of possessing the human body in this reality. And what they do is they take over its mental and emotional processes and basically take control of it. And it's very similar to, you know, we have these laboratories and these scientists, and they have these tanks, and they have these gloves which they put on, and they work in the tank, even though they're on the outside, they work inside the tank with these gloves. It's very similar symbolically to that. They are not, these entities are not in this visible light frequency range, but they're able to manipulate it by working through physical bodies that are. And so when you look into the eyes of Ted Heath, for instance, or I did on that occasion, and many other people had the same experience, the reason that didn't make eye contact was because he'd gone into a mode where I'm looking through his physical vehicle that I see as human into this these other dimensions which connect into him and control behavior and control thought and emotional processes. And it's this possession. And so when we're seeing people see the shape-shifting phenomena, what happens, and it often happens when these people are in high emotion, you are looking at the physical level, and your brain's decoding it as a human body, and then for some reason, and again, high emotion seems to be a common theme, this other level comes into the visible light frequency range, and whoa, he's just changed, and then it goes back again. Did you see that?
Right.
And because we are led to believe, and basically, if you look at society, James, it is all geared to enticing and activating the five senses.
Now listen,
and that keeps us in this reality.
We've got to take a break for the news. Ian, thank you very much indeed for your call. We've got loads more calls. Can you stay after the news?
Sure, mate, yeah.
You okay? You take a break for a moment then, David, and maybe have a cup of tea or something. We will take a break for the news. Let me remind you, we're giving you the chance to win £80,000 tax-free, or a brand new Aston Martin V8 Vantage by the end of this week, 5 o'clock this Friday afternoon. One of you is going to be the proud owner of the new Aston Martin, or £80,000 in cash. We're doing the How Low reverse auction, where the person who bids the lowest unique amount by 5 o'clock this Friday afternoon will win the car. All you have to do is text the word Aston, followed by your bid to 88821. 88821. Text the word Aston, followed by your bid to 88821. And there are no unique bids under £30 or 3,000p, so you have to go above that. The competition ends this Friday at 5. Players must be 16 or over. Entries are limited, cost £1.50 plus standard charges. See talksport.net for terms and conditions.
Thursday, and the Setanta staff are brainstorming taglines for the new Setanta Golf Channel.
How about Sky Sports has lost the USPGA Golf?
To the point, but not exactly brimming with wit. Colin?
Do you follow the USPGA Tour? Better follow it to Setanta then.
That I like.
Or what about the USPGA Tour is cancelled?
What?
For Sky Sports subscribers.
Oh, that's clever, Debbie. Who needs an advertising agency?
Setanta Golf's exclusively live coverage of the USPGA Tour starts January the 8th. Get Setanta. Call 08700 55 66 77 or visit setanta.com.
If your Christmas wish is for more hours in a day, so you can get all your shopping done, you're in luck. This Christmas, Argos is opening more stores for longer than ever before. Check the store locator at argos.co.uk for details of your nearest store. Don't Christmas shop for it, Argos it.
There's not an easy way to say it, but in the 2 years you've been here, you've needed daily assistance, permanently sent in projects late with vital pages missing, and for that reason, I'm sorry, but you're fired.
Printer struggling to keep up? Give it the boot and get the new Lexmark X5470 all-in-one. Buy it now for just $69.99 with free next business day replacement guarantee. No wonder 75% of the world's top banks use Lexmark. Available at PC World, Argos and Comet. Visit lexmark.co.uk for more details.
Okie dokie, David's staying with us for the next part of the programme. We'll try and get through to as many of you as we can. If you want to talk to the legendary David Icke, call us now, 08704 20 20 20, or text me at 81089, 50p plus sending charges. And we will get back to discussing the world in David's eyes after the news.
1089 and 1053 AM.
I declare that the person elected
around the world.
We need to build a bridge
around the clock.
What is moral about that?
From the Sky News Centre. Talk Sport on the Hour News.
The top stories from the Sky News Centre at midnight. After giving an interview to a newspaper about the Suffolk murders, Thomas Stevens is now in police custody. Officers say he's being held in connection with all five killings. In the Sunday Mirror, he admitted knowing all five prostitutes but denied killing them. Our crime correspondent, Martin Brunsbin, speaking to detectives who still have a lot of work to do to bring closure to this major operation.
An investigation that may go on for weeks or months, and I think it is important to remember that this man is in custody. He's been arrested, but he hasn't been charged, and there's often a very long way between the events like this today and somebody being charged and appearing in court.
20-year-old Yusuf Jammer has been found guilty of murdering PC Sharon Beshinivsky during a bungled robbery in Bradford last year. Two brothers were convicted of her manslaughter by jurors at Newcastle Crown Court. Unforgivable and inexcusable failings led to the death of a British tank commander in Iraq. A coroner said problems in the army's supply chain were to blame for Sergeant Steve Roberts being killed by friendly fire. Speaking outside the court in Oxford, his widow Samantha echoed that sentiment.
We must ensure that these failures are not repeated with other basic kit. We have heard from Steve himself, who said it's disheartening to go to war without the correct equipment.
An infection control operation's underway at a Staffordshire hospital after a new strain of MRSA killed two people. A healthcare worker and a patient died from the PVL version of the superbug at hospital in Stoke-on-Trent. Space shuttle astronauts have left their ship for a fourth spacewalk in a last-ditch effort to free a jammed solar wing panel on the International Space Station. Discovery is due to return to Earth later this week. World-famous animator Joseph Barbera has died. He was 95. He was best known for the Flintstones, the Jets, and the ghost-hunting classic Scooby-Doo. In football, Fulham overcame a daunting injury list to beat Middlesbrough 2-1 at Craven Cottage and move up to 11th in the Premiership. The goals were scored by Haidar Helgeson and Brian McBride. That's the latest. I'm Tim Jones.
Me, Total Chief James Whale.
Bald Eagle is back after break.
Next
on Talk Sport.
Christmas on Talk Sport.
There was Whale drinking whiskey and Gaunty on brandy. A bucket of Perno between Paul and Andy. But may we present the DJ who decided to repent.
Brazil, the brand new DJ. Always in his bed by nine.
Nine at night as well.
Tai Chi, organic whole foods. Only sacramental wine.
Not for me, thanks, Father.
Straight home for lunch and yoga.
Check out my cobra, darling.
In keeping with his new curfew.
I've been chilling out for 28 years.
No whiskey on his cornflakes. Now he sticks to iron blue.
Reckless of champions.
Always gets to work on time. He's a brand new modern man. He's the jock of pop, that's not percent, and he bays in every hand.
Straight from my pores, Mickey.
So now every morning, he's sharp, he's quick, he's cool, he's mean.
Promise you.
Brazil's a brand new DJ. A beaky's hook commends a dream.
Come on, I'll take you all out!
Alan Brazil Sports Breakfast, this morning from 6 on Talk Sport. Talk Sport. Sports update.
In the Premiership, it finished Fulham 2, Middlesbrough 1 at Craven Cottage. Haidar Helgeson with a penalty and Brian McBride got Fulham's goals, with Mark Viduka replying for Borough in the second half. Fulham move up four places to 11th in the table, while Gareth Southgate's side stay above the bottom three on goal difference. Italy's World Cup winning captain Fabio Cannavaro has become the first defender to be named FIFA World Player of the Year. He beat Ronaldinho and Zinedine Zidane in a vote by national team coaches and captains. Arsene Wenger has promised to fight the FA charge of improper conduct arising from Saturday's 2-2 draw with Portsmouth. He was sent off at half-time by referee Steve Bennett after complaining about the stoppage time free kick, which led to no Pamaro's opening goal. Wenger told Sky Sports News what he did is small potatoes.
I will not accept this any charge on that incident.
You feel that strongly about it, clearly.
I feel that strongly about it. And I find it, Philip, quite scandalous, considering what I've seen in the corridors in the last 10 years.
Wigan midfielder Lee McCulloch's been charged with violent conduct by the Football Association for punching Chris Morgan in the face towards the end of Saturday's 1-0 defeat to Sheffield United. And Everton want the FA to consider taking action against Jose Mourinho for accusing Andy Johnson of diving to try and win a penalty at Goodison Park on Sunday. 16 years to win them back, 15 days to lose them. That's how England's Ashes efforts are being described in the Australian media. The urn is back down under after the Aussies took the third test in Perth by 206 runs. Here are the thoughts of Australia's Ricky Ponting and England captain Andrew Flintoff.
We experienced what it was like at the Oval 18 months ago, and the lads are bitterly disappointed. They've given their all for these three test matches. You know, there's been some fine performances, but it hasn't quite come off for us.
I wasn't hurting any more than anybody else after the last series, even though I was captain and a lot of things were directed at me. As a group, we've all sat down and worked things out and played well.
Well, if you can stand it, the fourth test starts in Melbourne on Boxing Day. There's reports every 10 minutes during play on TalkSport from Jack Bannister. Jockeys Kieran Fallon, Fergal Lynch and Darren Williams will be tried next autumn in connection with the police investigation into alleged race fixing. That's the latest from the Sky News Centre. I'm Russell Hope.
On 1089 and 1053 AM, James Whale on TalkSport.
Welcome back to the James Whale Show tonight. Oh, Chess is in bearing gifts, Ash. Be careful, man. She's got aphrodisiac chocolate there.
Nice. Yeah, what is it? What's in it?
It's
then?
Aphrodisiac chocolate.
What does it do then? It makes you...
It's chocolate like curry. It's curried chocolate. What? You know, I can't eat any more of it, but it's chocolate with chilli in it.
It's by a company called Feeding Your Imagination.
Yeah, but don't come in and do the flipping commercial on the programme. No, we'll get... Ash, stop making that noise.
It's spicy chocolate, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Cholly... Can't even speak
now. At first
you
think it's chocolate and then it burns your mouth.
Chili and chocolate was an aphrodisiac. In fact, the Mayans first of all put... Didn't they put chili...
It's giving me the horn.
At what?
It's lovely.
It's what?
It's making me, you know,
it's giving you the horn?
Yeah.
All right.
There you go. Yeah.
It's very nice. Thank you, Chessie. Very nice. Chessie will be here with Mr. Collins a little later, letting him assist her on her new show tonight.
No, How's it been for you? Is it stimulating?
It is very nice. The legendary David Icke is my guest on the show tonight. David, thanks. Chocolate with chilli is not something I would have thought of eating, I must admit, but it's interesting. Because it goes for two... It's like what we were talking about before, you know, attacking two senses at once. You get sweet, and then you get sort of... very strange. David, right, welcome back. Listen, let's kick off and go straight into the calls, because I'm now getting complaints. There are a amount of people who want to talk to you, which isn't surprising, really, when David actually does his stage show. The last one of which, I think, was in Brixton, wasn't it, at the...
The Academy in Brixton, it was absolutely fantastic. 2,000 people, and for people to come in those numbers, not just from all over Britain, but from different parts of the world, and actually listened intently for 7 hours, just shows that, the people are now really beginning to
open
their minds to this. I'm in the process of organising some more, yeah, but don't exactly know when yet.
As David said, it goes on for 7 hours, and people who go, and after the last one you did, I remember people were ringing me telling me it was like an experience they never thought. They thought they'd go, and they thought when they heard it was going to be so long, they go for about half an hour and then they go and leave and not bother to go back. But apparently people were calling me saying they were spellbound. They didn't even realize they'd been sitting there for 7 hours.
Well, what I do, I feel that if I've produced a DVD of the Brixton talk, which is now available on DVD, and the whole 7 hours is there, every sentence, and there's about best part of 1,000 illustrations. And the reason that people remain intently watching is because I don't just talk about one thing. I connect the dots. I start with A and I go through to Z, and this is necessary, like I said earlier, to understand why certain things that appear on first hearing to be bizarre are actually logically explained. You have to then introduce background information that people often won't have come across before because the mainstream system doesn't make it available. So that's the dot connecting. And, and the more you connect the dots as the day goes on, the more you can see those that are new to it anyway, eyes opening and minds opening and going, oh my goodness me, this makes sense. When they never thought, you're quite right, they never thought if they're new to it that it would make sense, but it does. But you have to connect the dots, and this is why it's so difficult for people like me to get across through the mainstream media shows like this apart. What I'm saying is because they operate on such a superficial level, you know, that they would report that some guy was saying the Earth was round, but they wouldn't be interested in talking about the law of gravity, if you follow me. So therefore, it's all on a superficial level, and if you keep it at that level, then people understand and really go, "What? This is ludicrous. This is ridiculous. The man's mad." So it's very difficult getting through the mainstream media because of the way it...
What you need is a politician that takes up the cudgel, really, and somebody that understands what you're about.
Yeah, but the thing is that because politicians are always looking at, or invariably looking at, image and what people think of them, they often will not pick up and go with it. For instance, you've got people in politics who are complaining about the effects of the war on terror, the increased surveillance, lack of privacy. They are going on about the invasion of Iraq and what a terrible thing it is, but they will not even look, a lot of them, at the information that 9/11 was not the official story's version was not true. They won't even go there. They won't even look at the information because that means looking at a totally different worldview of what's going on and how these events come about. And it's much easier for them to stay in their own comfort zone, accept the yes that the 9/11 official story was basically true, because that means I don't have to change my worldview of everything, and I'll just have a go at the invasion of Iraq and the loss of privacy and the stuff. I will not go to the heart of what is generating all this stuff that I'm complaining about. And that's the problem with politicians, even those that are not, you know, government yes men.
Okay, we got loads of calls, as I said. We're going to go to Tony and Sheldon in a moment, but a text here from Rob in, funnily enough, in Brixham. We were talking about Brixham. He says, does David have any idea of who these puppet masters are, and does he not name them for his own safety?
Well, no. I have never not named anyone that I, through research, believe to be involved. This is one of the reasons, James, that I started publishing my own books in 1994, when I started with And the Truth Shall Set You Free, was because I'd been writing books that were published by, you know, kind of regular publishers up to that point. But when I produced And the Truth Shall Set You Free, I think the guy who read the manuscript is still running, and they just wouldn't go there. Reason being that I am naming the names, and they were terrified of that. So I had to start publishing my own books, which means that I don't have them edited. So I name everyone that I know. The thing is that...
Have you been sued yet?
No. No, I haven't. Most of the books that really name the names are past the point where they can do that anyway, because of the time. Like I say, I mentioned Ted Heath in terms of many horrific things that he was involved in, and it was read to him, the whole thing I said about him was read to him within a week of publication of the book in 1998, and nothing happened. But the whole situation regarding naming names, I don't know who some of the names are in the real shadows, where the real power is.
Are you frightened for your safety or not?
No, No, I'm not. Because once you, it kind of all connects into everything else. Once you start to realize the nature of reality, and it's not about life after death, it's just life changing its form, our perception moving from this reality to another reality. That's what we call death. It's leaving this physical vehicle that locks us through the five senses into this reality, moving into another one when we leave this vehicle and if you like, go to another radio station or whatever. And so once you realize all that, the fear of death just disappears. So you do what you believe to be right, and the consequences will be what they are. But also, the more you get into understanding the nature of reality and the nature of consciousness, you can actually control, to an extent, to a large extent, depends how much consciousness you want to take power with. You can control your destiny. You're not, locked into some situation where you're a pawn in the game. In the game if you get caught in this computer level of reality.
Okay, let's have another text from Carol in Plymouth this time. Says, please ask David if he knows about Common Purpose. It's the worldwide training school for the future leaders, she says.
Well, I've not come across Common Purpose. If she'd like to contact me through the website, I'd love to know any information she's got. But the basic premise I mentioned earlier, these leaders that come to power and are significant in terms of their actions changing society on a national or global level, these people do not come out of random spontaneity. They are brought through to do that role. So you get someone like the Bush family. You had Prescott Bush, the grandfather, who was one of the funders of Hitler. Now, I was writing this years ago that he was one of the funders of Hitler through a company called the Union Banking Corporation. And now, since then, people like John Loftus, who's at the Holocaust Museum in Florida, and was an investigator into the whole Nazi thing, he has come out and said that the Bush family fortune largely came from funding the Nazis. So you have someone like Prescott Bush, and he has a son called George Bush Senior, Father George Bush. Now, Father George Bush was brought through from childhood to be president. That's the way it works. So he comes through, he is head of the Republican Party at the time of the Watergate hearings, he's head of the CIA, he comes through on the back of Reagan because Reagan was someone they could sell and Father George Bush was not, so they bring him in as vice president. Reagan is the official president, the real president is Father Bush. He has two terms as unofficial president, he then has one term of the presidency himself. Then comes two terms of Clinton, and the Clinton family are extremely close, bosom buddies behind the scenes with the Bush family. And then you have two terms of boy George Bush, and now they're talking about Hillary Clinton coming through to possibly be the first woman president of the United States. So if that's the case, we would have had Bush and Clinton families from 1979 right the way through to however long she stays in power, if she does. And if this is in a country that's anyone supposed to become president. These people are chosen and brought through, mate.
If you knew who the real leaders were and what it was all about, if you knew who they were, would you spill the beans?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. There's no question.
All right.
People said, is your phone tapped? And I said, well, what's the point? They don't have to come to an event or read my books or go on my website. They'll know everything I know. Because I don't hold things back. The only thing I hold things back is if I think I'm not yet totally convinced this is the case, so I'm gonna hold back this information until I am. But once I'm convinced by the wealth of information, then out it goes. I don't care, because if it's true, people should know about it, and if it's not true, I shouldn't be saying it.
Okay, one last text, and then I'm seriously going to go to the calls. Mike in Reading's asked, I think it's quite an interesting question. He said, ask David how the changing roles and interaction between men and women, and whether it has anything to do with the change in the world order.
Well, I think it does, in the sense that, but there's different ways of looking at this. You have a world that appears to be controlled by men, and on the surface it is. But You know, in the energy spectrum from the male to the female, you have extremes of both. And the extreme of the male energy is imposing will physically. It is knock on the door. It's the soldiers at the door. It's the uniform. It's the gun and all that stuff. And it's the men in dark suits imposing themselves on the politics. But the extreme of female energy is covert manipulation, manipulation behind the scenes. Now, these people who are manipulating society, they don't go and fight in Iraq. I mean, if George Bush had been on the front when the first bullet was fired in Iraq, he'd have been under a bed in Houston when the second one went off. He doesn't go and fight. I mean, I live it this week, James, when Blair is saying, we will stay as long as we have to. We then got on the plane and went home. So the people who are manipulating are doing it in the extreme of the female energy, which works behind the scenes and manipulates and sets up the extreme of the male energy to play out the manipulation, which is why it seems to be a male-dominated
right,
world.
Here's one that's just come in. It says, from one who is waking up. Why do all voters, why do we cast our vote at local polling stations using pencils and not pens? I've no idea.
I don't know. I just emphasize that point just to finish what I was saying. I'm not saying that behind the scenes it's all women manipulating. I'm not saying that. So I'm talking about female energy which takes that form.
Yeah.
What we're looking for, surely, is a balance of both, because a balance of both, the extremes are balanced out.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is, you know, that men's place in the world has been completely usurped, because, quite frankly, women don't need men anymore. The masculine, the normal, the sort of biological masculine role, as it were, doesn't exist, which is why now, sadly and tragically, so many young men take their own lives, so many young men get deep depressions, because they're not actually sure at the moment what their role in the world is. And suddenly we have half the generation of the planet, in many cases, if you like, floundering around.
Well, this is a very interesting point. We get caught so often in these apparent dilemmas and emotional problems. I'm a man, I'm a woman, what's my role, and all this stuff, because we are perceiving ourselves at the level of the computer. The physical body, the genetic computer, decides if we're male or female. And when you get to the level of consciousness, or possibility, beyond this physical realm, there is no male and female. There is just one consciousness that is all possibility and encompasses all. So, and it's when you lose sight of that fact, you start identifying who you are with Bill Jones, who was born in wherever, and I'm a man, and oh, I've lost my role in society because I'm a man. See, I don't personally, after what I've kind of experienced, I don't identify with being a man, and I don't identify with being a woman. I don't identify with being English, and I don't identify with being human. I just am.
Yeah.
I'm none of those things, but I'm all of those things, and so I don't have any feelings personally of I'm a man, so what's my role in life? It's just I am what I am, and I'm not going to have my agenda set by some computer program that I'm inherited.
Right. Let's go to the calls. Tony is in Sheldon. Sorry to keep you waiting, Tony. You're
That's
on the
okay,
air.
Okay, James.
All right.
Hello, James. Hello, Dave.
Hello, mate.
I admire you for sticking your neck out in the first place, but what I mostly admire you for is sticking it out for the time you have. And there's lots of ufologists around who know what you speak about the reptilian agenda is a fact. There's lots of reptilian closeness and attachment with entities that are coming here, and they won't speak out and they annoy me. Or there's many reasons, and I can understand in some circumstances, but mostly some of them it's ridicule. They just will not stick their neck out, and there's lots of people that are having so-called paranormal experiences in this world and realize that the established orthodox scientists, prostitutes, they realize that the box type mentality they keep us in is not the true real thing. And as I say, they realize and they've woke up to this, and it's spreading more and more, but still people are in there little nutshells, and they're frightened to stick their head above the parapet because of mostly ridicule, and that annoys me. But I'm afraid the day is coming, and it's not too far away, where the world is going to find out in a big way.
Okay.
I agree with that. And this is one of the big things that keeps this information out of the public arena, is that people who know won't go there because they fear the reaction of others. And thanks to that ridicule I went through in the early 1990s, which cleared me of any concern with what people thought of me, I'm able to do that in peace without worrying about the consequences. And if more people could do that, people would see just how widespread this information is known outside the public arena.
Okay. Tony, thank you very much indeed. Let's go to London. Dave is in London. Dave, you're on the air through to David Icke. Dave? Talk to me, Dave? No? Okay, let's go to Chris, who's in Whitehaven, in Cumbria. Chris, you're on the air through to David Icke.
Hello there, David. It's
hello, Chris.
To you. I think we're in end times, mate. 9/11, if we can't get the truth out, media suppression, 7/7, crudely termed, incidents on the same day, which were meant to be, martial law around the corner. If we can't get the 9/11 truth out, my honest opinion is we really are at an end with the society of a world, and we're going to die of apathy if we can't solve the 9/11 problem. That's how strong I feel about
it. What is the 9/11 problem, Chris?
The lies which have been told, the media suppression, the incidents, the hole in the Pentagon, which is about 3 yards wide, NORAD standing down. I could go on for 10 hours, James, but it's not my show.
No, don't go on for 10 hours. There's a good chap.
Yeah, Chris is right. I mean, the information that is available now, great detailed information,
yep,
utterly demolishes the official story of 9/11, is just ridiculous. And if we could get this into the public arena, and it is getting there. I mean, you know, I was in America recently, and I was talking to some people on the inside of government, if you like, and they were absolutely pumping me with questions. Mm. Tell me about 9/11. It didn't feel right to me. It never did. And I came across this, actually, in relation to that question, just to give you an idea of how things are suppressed. Chris talked there about the fact that there's a lot of questions to ask with regard to the plane or no plane that hit the Pentagon, the Flight 77, as was said. Now, what we were told in the official story was that, and indeed Donald Rumsfeld said on Larry King Live, which is just after 9/11, that the first he knew that there was any plane heading for the Pentagon was when he felt, quote, a jarring thing when the building was hit on the far, far side away from where he was. And the whole official story is that they lost contact with this plane, and the last minute they realized it was going to coming into Washington and hit the building, and that was it. And then it was too short a time to respond. Well, they had a 9/11 commission, which was a bit like the Stevens inquiry into Diana's death. It was designed to not come to the wrong conclusion. For instance, the 9/11 commission's first appointed head was Henry Kissinger, and even the mainstream media in America found that insane, and he had to step down.
How do they do this to us? I mean, first of all, the Stevenson inquiry into the death of Diana, which something was, if only for the fact that it's taken them 10 years to have to do it, something is wrong somewhere.
Yep.
And the death of Dr. David Kelly.
Oh, absolutely.
That had, and yet nobody, you know, even if we talk about it for a while, it still just disappears and nobody takes it up. These two amazing things happened right under the noses of the people of Britain.
Yeah.
Then we had the 7/7, we had the 9/11, obviously, before that. It just goes on.
Yeah, because these commissions are designed not to come to any conclusion that would uncover what's really going on. I mean, someone like Blair is not going to appoint someone like Hutton to run a inquiry that's going to destroy him. He's going to make sure before the inquiry starts that the outcome is decided and there's going to be no problem for him. But then the 9/11 Commission is a classic example. One of the people that gave evidence to it was Norman Mineta, who was the Secretary for Transportation. He was the guy on 9/11 who gave the order to ground all planes. Now, this is what he said to the 9/11 Commission, and he was talking about the fact that he was in the underground control room bunker at the White House with Dick Cheney in the run-up to the Pentagon being hit by a plane. The official story says they knew nothing about what was happening until virtually it had hit the building. And this is what he said in his experience in that bunker. During the time that the airplane was coming into the Pentagon, there was a young man who would come in and say to the vice president, the plane is 50 miles out, the plane is 30 miles out. And when it got down to the plane is 10 miles out, the young man also said to the vice president, do the orders still stand? And the vice president turned and whipped his neck around and said, of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything to the contrary? Now, he is therefore saying that the vice president of the United States was having this plane, or whatever it was, counted down as it came into Washington, while all the response organizations and Donald Rumsfeld is saying we knew nothing about it until the plane hit. This is highly, highly significant evidence. And there's the other question, which is, do the orders still stand? Well, what orders was this man talking about to the vice president? It certainly wasn't the orders to shoot the plane down, because the plane wasn't shot down. The only conclusion you can come to is the orders still stand were do not shoot it down. But the point is that I mentioned this in relation to all these commissions and inquiries, is when the 9/11 Commission published its report, this evidence was not in it. And this is how it works. They make sure that the stuff that would really blow the official story is not included and is not emphasized, and therefore conclusions are come to. I love this Stevens inquiry, James, where he's saying there is no evidence that the NSA, the National Security Agency in America, was bugging Diana. There was no evidence. Well, what did he do? Ask him. I mean, you know, excuse me, did you bug? No, we never bugged it. See, there's no evidence.
David.
Well, what's it all about? It's ridiculous.
Look, Stevens, Lord Stevens, whatever his name is, made a very interesting point. He said, and I can't remember the exact quote, but he said something along the lines, there is, in my view, no evidence now. Mm. And the interesting word is now, because, of course, 10 years after the event, it would be quite difficult,
right,
to get the evidence. This car, they're not even denying that there was a car involved that they can't find. They're all, I mean, go on to the David Kelly thing. I mean, I interviewed a couple of trauma surgeons afterwards who wrote an open letter to the newspaper, and it soon got lost, this, saying there is no way. These guys deal with trauma, people trying to take their own lives and things. They deal with this every day. And first of all, it is almost impossible to slit your wrists and die from it unless you're in a bath. And it's very difficult to slit your wrists with a blunt knife, which is more or less what it was supposedly done with.
Exactly, and the paramedics on the scene apparently said there was very little blood. And how do you die of, you know, doing that and slitting your wrists and bleeding to death? It's not much blood.
But suddenly nobody...
None of it makes sense.
Nobody was involved. Sadly, the family, you can understand how they felt, didn't want a fuss made and didn't have anything done. But it just seemed... These things happen, and they happen... and people say, you can't get away with this. What on earth happened there? This is just, it doesn't feel right. And suddenly, I could do a program with every phone call ringing in saying, as it did after Diana died.
Right.
And we were talking about this, obviously, for months and months and months. People were saying, well, something's funny here. Yes, what's going on? Nobody would answer. There was no investigation. There was no autopsy. Suddenly we hear bloods had been confused, but then they hadn't. And Henri Paul was drunk, and then he wasn't. And if he'd been drunk by the amount they found in his blood, he wouldn't have been able to walk, let alone drive a car.
Right.
All these things went on. And, of course, if you just ignore it, if you're in some position of authority, you just ignore it. That's it, isn't it?
That's the point. I mean, I remember...
None of us are safe. Anybody could... You know, they can suddenly take anybody out they want.
I was reading something about Margaret Thatcher years ago, about her attitude was, if you just keep denying it, you just keep what she called toughing it out and not accepting what is obviously true, then something will come along and replace the headline in relation to what you're toughing out and replace it with something else, and then some public attention is turned away.
Do you know, this is a funny thing, David. When Margaret Thatcher was the leader of this country, I felt quite safe.
Well, you know, during the 1980s, the period of, and again, what are the chances of someone coming to power in Britain in 1979 and introducing a form of economics which became known as Thatcherism? And in 1980, Ronald Reagan, frontman, yes, but came to power in America and introduced Reaganomics, and the two economic systems were mirrors of each other. Again, that was orchestrated. And through the 80s, both of them served the agenda well. I think Margaret Thatcher did it almost entirely unknowingly. I think she was massively manipulated. You know, but when you do this research, you find enormous numbers of ironies from the perception that people have of a situation to what was really happening. And she had this global reputation as the Iron Lady. And the more and more I understand about that period, she was massively manipulated, not least by her foreign secretary, Lord Carrington, a extremely close associate of Henry Kissinger, and indeed a founding director with Kissinger of a notorious company called Kissinger Associates. And it was the refusal to reveal the clients of Kissinger Associates that forced Kissinger to step down from the 9/11 commission we talked about earlier. So Margaret Thatcher then became a problem for the agenda, in the sense that she was talking very strongly against more and more centralization in Europe. And this is the way it works.
All right.
If you're talking against the agenda, then you are removed through political manipulation, or, like David Kelly and stuff, you're removed in more serious ways.
We've got to take a break, David. We'll be back with you and some more of the callers. Raqqa in Worcester right after this.
Think you know sport? Then take the Talk Sport Challenge with the new interactive quiz DVD, hosted by Mike Hawkey Parry. With over 2,000 questions, hundreds of multimedia features, plus single and team player functions, the Talk Sport Challenge quiz DVD is the ultimate in super sober-based fun for seriously sport brain fans. Take the Talk Sport Challenge with the new interactive quiz DVD.
Mental!
Available 20th of November from all major DVD retailers.
And some pants ones as well.
See TalkSport.net for details.
This Christmas, may you be the lucky one who finds the golden coin in your Christmas pudding. And may you eat it, chip some teeth, and find it lodged in your windpipe. And ho, may you pull your crackers with mighty Christmas gusto. Such gusto that your elbow slams through the front of your new widescreen plasma. For it's the season of goodwill to all men. Except drink drivers. If you're drinking, don't drive. Think.
You were walking along, minding your own business. Then you tripped over because someone failed to do their job. Time to let the Legal Advice Bureau do theirs. Call 0800 195 1951 for a quick free assessment. We'll take care of your personal injury claim every step of the way, from paperwork to solicitors. 0800 195 1951. The Legal Advice Bureau, where claiming compensation is painless. 0800 195 1951.
Moan, 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 moan. Start to finish, every single job, you're always moaning. You think you're irreplaceable? Well, I've got news for you. Get out and don't darken my door again.
Printer struggling to keep up? Give it the boot and get the new Lexmark X5470 all-in-one. Buy it now for just $69.99 with free next business day replacement guarantee. No wonder 75% of the world's top banks use Lexmark. Available at PC World, Argos and Comet. Visit lexmark.co.uk for more details.
TalkSport on 1089 and 1053 AM.
Merry Christmas!
And Sky Digital Channel 0108. Talk Sport.
Don't forget, 10 to 1 this evening, it's the main man of late night radio. It's the whale man himself, James Rawl Radio.
The resolution by this morning, the Atomic Detonation Initiative is drifting. It is suggested that everyone remain indoors until further notice. There is
Hi, K. Okie dokie, here we go. Let's say hi to William, who's in the Algarve at the moment. He said, listening to you on World Space Radio all over Europe and Far East. Couldn't live without TalkSport. William in the Algarve. Hi, William. Nice to have you with us. David Icke's my guest tonight. David's on the Isle of Wight. So we're joining up all over the world, really, aren't we? I actually thought they were going to turn the Isle of Wight into a prison island and just use
they
it.
They have, that's why David's there.
No, don't be ridiculous. Do you know I met my wife on the Isle of Wight, but that's another story I'm not prepared to go into. We did our courting on Tennyson Downs.
Oh, yes. What a beautiful place, just above the Needles.
Yeah, in fact, I think one of my children may have been conceived there, but it's a long time ago.
Well, it's a beautiful place, that's for sure.
And fresh... Do you know Freshwater, the little bit in Freshwater?
Yep.
I haven't been there for years and years and years, but I used there's a little hotel or caff right on the edge there.
Yeah, I know it.
And in the winter, the waves used to break right over the sea wall there. It's just a little bay, and it just used to... I used to love just sitting there watching the sea.
Yeah, the sea can get seriously rough there when he wants to, doesn't he?
That's right, yeah. Okay, let's get on. Raka is in Worcester. Hi, Raka, you're on the air through to David Icke.
Hi there, how are you?
I'm good.
Excellent. David, yeah.
Hello, mate.
How you doing? Big fan, great fan. Tales from the Time Loop, one of the greatest books I've ever read. Just basically wanted to briefly touch on the whole reptilian agenda.
Yeah.
I'd like to just ask, do you think it's possible that, somebody could be a reptile without being aware, or possibly be related to a reptilian, without them obviously being aware of it themselves, but have seen them shapeshift, and, you know, the actual person that did it wasn't aware that it was happening?
Oh, I think definitely, yes, probably the vast majority. The way this thing seems to work is that if you go back to... the far ancient world, and you can pick up this same recurring story everywhere. In the biblical text, it talks about
exactly right, yeah.
The sons of God who interbred with the daughters of men,
right.
But that basic when they create the Nephilim hybrid Nephilim bloodline. Well, uh-huh. You go all around the world, you hear the same story in the ancient cultures. They just use different names. In South Africa, it's the Chitahuri, the children of the serpent,
yeah.
And these hybrid bloodlines became the quote special bloodlines, the royal bloodlines that claim the right to rule because of their descendants from the gods, and this eventually became this idea of the royal divine right to rule. What it is, it's the...
Are they a different race, would you say?
They are definitely, and what... they do not relate to an Earth race, if you like. They interbred with all different races. And interestingly, the area which is really significant in the historical story of these bloodlines and where the prime ones, if you like, came out of is ancient Sumer, which became Babylon, which is now Iraq. This is a really important historical area for these bloodlines. And they came out of Sumer and out of Babylon, and they went down into Africa. I saw in the Crater Mutwa this Zulu shaman, 85 years old, about 3 or 4 weeks ago now, and he was telling me that the royal bloodlines of Africa claim descendants from these gods, and they claim the right to rule because of their genetic descendants, in the same way that the ancient Chinese emperors claim the right to rule because of their descendants from the serpent gods, etc. And interestingly, Kreda Mutwa was saying that when the colonial powers gave independence, apparent independence, illusory so, to African countries, the black African leaders, or a great majority of them that came in and were placed into power in the new free countries, were of these ancient royal bloodlines. And when you do the genealogy of American presidents, you find the same story. So they interbred with all different races, but what connects them is this hybrid bloodline. And what it is, the DNA is actually just a vibrational field, like everything is. And this interbreeding created a physical vehicle that had a vibrational sympathy with these entities that operate just outside of the realm of human sight. And it makes possession of these particular bloodlines, these particular family groups, much easier because of the vibrational compatibility than it does trying to possess someone who is not of this bloodline. And so what the you have at this physical five-sense level is the interbreeding of these families, this obsessive interbreeding that we've seen right through the centuries with royal families and establishment families, which is actually creating the physical vibrational vehicle for these entities to possess. It's creating like the spacesuit that they can manipulate this world through. And this is why they're obsessed with genetics, and they're obsessed with interbreeding and holding this particular hybrid bloodline. And, you know, you look at the Queen, James, today, yep. Buckingham Palace. Why is she head of state in Britain? Because of her genetics, because of her family line. It's still going on today. But what happened is when overt control by royal dictatorship, the people started to rebel against that, these bloodlines moved into other forms of control, like politics and business and banking and the media ownership and all this stuff. And they've gone on controlling ever since, but instead of wearing a crown, they overwhelmingly now wear dark suits and stuff. But okay. this is where it comes from.
Let's move on, because we've got so many calls, we're never going to have enough time. By the way, let me remind everybody that there is now a documentary that they've made for Channel 5. It comes out on the night, 11 o'clock, the night of Boxing Day, the 26th of December, and it's called David Icke, Was He Right? And you can see, I think it's an hour long, isn't it, David?
It is, yes, it is. It's very impressive in many ways.
And you can also catch more of David on his website, davidicke.com, I think it is, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah, okay. Lee is in Ipswich. Hi, Lee, you're on the air through to David Icke.
Well, thank you. So you're David Icke. Well, I've got a special message just for you. I know what the people in power are most afraid of. Can we talk off air at some time?
No, we don't talk off air, Lee, I'm afraid.
Well, if you want to contact me, Lee, through my website, which is, James said, davidicke.com, then we can communicate that way, no problem, mate.
Yeah, why don't you do that, Lee? Thank you very much indeed. Martin on Tyneside. Hi, Martin, you're on the air.
Hello, I'm actually in Wearside, I'm in Sunderland.
I beg your pardon, but last time you phoned, you were on Tyneside, apparently.
Oh, but it's probably an 0191 call.
Okay.
Gave you that idea.
All right.
I've got two things. I want to, first of all, salute David Icke for his efforts towards, what he believes is the truth. And I've read a few of his books, and I can't dismiss his theories.
Are you in a phone box, Martin?
Yeah, I'm actually in a phone box.
Can I tell you, David, Martin has been waiting over half an hour to speak to you in a phone box.
Yeah.
Okay. Ask what you like, mate.
First thing, enough respect to you for what you're doing. I think it's really good, yeah? Carry on, don't give up, but you don't need telling that. Go for it. Secondly, it's more of a personal thing. It's to do with my address. As you know, a lot of these things are to do with architecture and everything, like the big pentangle that's been Washington, D.C., with
right.
the White House and the bottom point of the five-pointed satanic star and things, yeah?
Yeah, now, Washington, D.C. is a massive esoteric symbolism in the street plan.
Yeah. I tell all these goth kids in black about it, and like, and then they go and find out, and it's like, you know, part of the awakening. But what my question is, since I read your literatures, one of them, The Biggest Secret, I switched on to this thing about the Illuminati and some of the manifestations in architecture that it takes. Now, in Sunderland, I've been told that there's one of the oldest Masonic lodges in the country. I've actually noticed that my own... Am I allowed to say my own address on
I wouldn't say your own address, no.
Okay, well, I've noticed that there's a street in Sunderland that's named after a Scottish lord, of the Royal... Scottish Freemasonry, yeah. What's it called? The
Scottish Rite.
The Scottish Rite, yeah. The Royal Scottish Rite. Now, this street has 33 houses on it. And at the top of the 33rd... you can actually see the war memorial with what seems to be a statue of Isis on top of it, the god of femininity, is that right?
Egyptian goddess, yeah.
Yeah,
the mirror of Mother Mary in many ways.
Now, my concern is that this address, and incidentally also tying in with it all, is there's two pillars at each end of each street, making four in total. Each pillar on each corner has 13 lines going along it. More over coincidental stuff. It occurred to me really suddenly after I'd read your literatures, and I was like, this seems to be ringing true. This 33rd house and the war memorial align at solstice when the sun rises.
Do you live in the 31st house?
I'm not allowed to say, am I?
All right, you can say whether you live in the house or not.
Yes, I noticed it at the top.
Okay, and do you, I mean, did you know when you moved into the house there was this sort of connotation or not?
No, I was actually homeless beforehand, and then I moved into this house, and I was
well, it may be very lucky for you. You never know, Martin. It might be good for you. Who knows?
Yeah, this is my question. What does this signify?
If anything.
Well, I can't say what it signifies for you, mate. But the principle you come across all the time, and basically what you're talking about is this ancient knowledge that was used way back and has been carried through the secret society network to the present day. For instance, there's a place in Ireland called Newgrange, and there is a tiny little entrance which you go through, and you have to bend down, and you go into a big kind of opening in the center of this mound, this ancient mound, and there's a long waiting list. It was 6 years the last I looked, for people to go in there on the I think it's the winter solstice, one of the solstices anyway, because at that point on the morning, as the sun comes up, it fires its light right the way through this tiny narrow entrance and lights up in golden light the whole of the center of this inside of this mound. Apparently it's just an incredible experience. So this alignment and this numerology, because in the end you can this reality breaks down on many levels, and one of them is mathematics. It is a mathematical construct, and very much symbolized. You know, when in the Matrix movies, when they were looking at the Matrix on the computer screens, they were seeing numbers and what have you going up and down, but they weren't seeing numbers. They were seeing street scenes and cars and people, because again, it was symbolic of this decoding mechanism. And there's one level of this reality that can be broken down in mathematics, and this knowledge is known about at the advanced level, the very advanced level within the secret society network, and they use it by this knowledge to manipulate people and manipulate energy fields and manipulate places by the way they align buildings, the way that they have, like you say, there's a certain number of buildings, like 33 houses, 33, 13, 11, comes up again and again with remarkable frequency. And the Knights Templar were one of the carriers of this knowledge, and they still are, because the Knights Templar are still going. And they built the great cathedrals of Europe based on what is known as sacred geometry, the understanding of alignment and form and how long something is and all the rest of it comes together, and it creates an energy field. It's the same reason that if you go into buildings that are straight lines, like skyscrapers and stuff like that, you get a certain energy field, and it's a very neutral, inspiring energy field, because straight lines do that. But you do a different kind of architecture, and you generate a different energy.
Okay.
And the energy affects people that go within it, that occupy it, because just as a fish is affected by the sea that it's swimming in and the state of the sea, so we are affected by the energy field we're living in, and these guys know this, and through various ways, not least some of the things we talked about, they manipulate that energy field to affect the way we see the world and keep us shut down, basically.
Thanks, Martin. I think you should go with the flow, Martin, not worry about it too much. It might be interesting. You might get some exceptional power, and some revelations may come to you. Who knows? Right, okay, this is from Xavier, who emailed this in earlier. He says, James, please ask David, is there any more news on Planet X, and is this in fact the same as the planet Nibiru? And if so, I think that's how you pronounce it, and if so, when will it become really noticeable, and why has everything gone so quiet concerning this mysterious planet?
I know of it. I can't talk about it in great depth, but there's this suggestion that there's a planet which in some accounts is called Nibiru, In fact, I think Sumerian accounts.
Yeah, that's right.
Goes out way out of this solar system, and then comes back in this kind of oval orbit. And when it comes close to the Earth, great changes take place.
It's every couple of thousand years it comes into our orbit, or something like that.
3,600 years, or something seems to come to mind. I read a lot about this at one time a few years ago, and there are people that talk about a planet being out there known as Planet X, which they suggest could be this Nibiru coming back.
Because the Sumerians knew all about it, and some of the early people knew about this planet, as far as I know. So maybe it comes back so close that there are beings that can easily hop from that to this. Who knows?
Well, the thing about Suma is so important. It's very clear that there was once a global society of great advancement, and this was brought to an end by fantastic cataclysms, which is why you have great flood stories in every single culture all over the world.
Yeah.
And official history says that Sumer is the cradle of civilization. I beg to differ. I would say that was when what we call civilization was starting to recover to some level of advancement after the cataclysm had destroyed the global society. And what's fantastic is when you talk to people like Credo Mutwa, who's not only a fantastic knowledge of Africa, he's traveled the world over his 85 years, and he's a fantastic library of knowledge about language. And he says that when he's traveled around the world, for instance, he was telling me a few weeks ago that he went to meet the Hopi people in Arizona, in America. And he said, I could understand about three of every five words they said, and I'm a Zulu from Africa. And when he breaks down the words and the names of goddesses and gods and the attributes given to these gods and goddesses, what you find is that what actually happened is that this global society was broken up by these cataclysms, and then these different fragmented societies that emerged afterwards, they carried the original knowledge, but because they became fragmented, they took that knowledge on in different directions and used different names and all the rest of it and added bits. But when you get to the core of it, wherever you go in the world and you look at the ancient knowledge and the ancient stories, they're the same, because there was this global society. And it's this ancient knowledge, this very advanced knowledge that has been hoarded by this network of secret societies at the highest levels.
Dave,
it's why they used the Inquisitions and stuff to destroy the ancient knowledge in the public arena.
David, believe it or not, we've come to the end. We've done two hours. And I want to thank you very much indeed. Listen, come back in the new year. Let's make it a date in the next few months. In the meantime, if people, because there were hundreds of phone calls which we didn't get on air tonight, and hundreds of emails and text messages, if you want to contact David, go to his website. It's dead easy, davidicke.com. And look out for the documentary, David Icke, Was He Right? Channel 5, 11 o'clock on Boxing Day night. David, always a pleasure. Thank you very much indeed. You've given lots of people lots of things to think about, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, mate. Have a good trip to France.
I will, and you have a good Christmas. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, mate.
Okay, bye.
Ho ho yo boys and girls, bad Santa, yeah, check this out, I've ditched the sleigh, yeah, it was well 80s, nang, and I've bagged myself this fly, new Aston Martin V8 Vantage, thanks to TalkSport special hello competition. Rudolph is gonna be well vexed, isn't he? Beauty could be impressing the ladies in a gleaming new Aston Martin V8 Vantage by entering TalkSport's hello reverse auction, where the lowest unique bid at the end of the auction wins. Text WIN followed by your bid in pence to 88821. Bidding is open till 5 p.m. on December 27, bidders must be 16 or over, bids cost £1.50 plus normal text charges. See TalkSport.net for terms and conditions. Hello is a syndicated promotion, thank you.
Keeping your family safe this winter is about more than wrapping them up warm or driving safely. You'll need to remember a phone number too, the National Gas Emergency Number. It's 0800 111 999. So wherever you are, and whatever you do, if you smell gas, dial it. It's 0800 111 999. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, 0800 111 999. Calls will be recorded and may be monitored. Does not operate in Northern Ireland.
Okay, fine.
things on your mind. Sometimes talking about it can help. Samaritans offers confidential, non-judgmental support 24 hours a day. Call 08457 909090 or email joe.